Chapter 79, The Prairie. To scan the lines of his face, or feel the bumps on the head of this leviathan, this is a thing which no physiognomist nor phrenologist has yet undertaken. Such an enterprise would seem almost as hopeful as Levator to have scrutinized the wrinkles on the Rock of Gibraltar, or for Gaul to have mounted a ladder and manipulated the dome of the Parthenon. Still, in that famous work of his, Levator not only treats the various faces of men, but also attentively studies the faces of horses, birds, serpents, and fish, and dwells in details upon the modifications of expression discernible therein. Nor have Gall and his disciple Spurheim failed to throw out some hints touching the phrenological characteristics of other beings than man. Therefore, I am but ill-qualified for a pioneer in the application of these two semi-sciences to the whale. I will do my endeavor. I try all things, achieve what I can. Physiognomically regarded, the sperm whale is an anomalous creature. He has no proper nose. And since the nose is the central and most conspicuous of the features, and since it perhaps most modifies and finally controls their combined expression, hence it would seem that its entire absence as an external appendage must very largely affect the countenance of the whale. For, as in landscape gardening, a spire, copla, monument, or tower of some sort is deemed almost indecipherable from the compilation of the scene, so no face can be physiognomically in keeping without the elevated openwork belfry of the nose. Dash the nose from Thetis's marvel Jove, and what a sorry reminder. Nevertheless, Leviathan is of so mighty a magnitude, all his proportions are so stately, that the same deficiency which in sculpture Jove were heinous in him is no blemish at all. Nay, it is an added grandeur. A nose to the whale would have been impertinent. And on your physiognomical voyage, you sail around his vast head in your jolly boat. Your noble conceptions of him are never insulted by the reflection that he has a nose to be pulled. A pestilent conceit, which so often will insist upon obtruding even when beholding the mightiest royal beetle in the throne. In some particulars, perhaps the most imposing physiognomical view to be had of the sperm whale is that of the full front of his head. This aspect is sublime. In thought of fine human brow, it is like the east when troubled with the morning. In the response to the pasture, the curled brow of the bull has a touch of grand in it. Pushing heavy cannon up mountain defiles, the elephant's brow is majestic. Human or animal, the mystical brow is as great golden seal affixed by the German emperors to their decrees. It signifies, God, done this day by my hand. In most creatures, nay, in man himself, very often the brow is but a mere strip of alpine land laying low the snow lines. Few are the foreheads which, like Shakespeare's or Melanchthon's, rise so high and descend so low that the eyes themselves seem clear, eternal, tideless mountain lakes, and all above them in the forehead's wrinkles you seem to track the antlered thoughts descending there to drink, as the Highland hunter tracks the snow prints of the deer. But in the great sperm whale, this high and mighty godlike dignity inherent in the brow is so immensely amplified that gazing on it in that full front view, you will feel the deity and dreaded powers more forcibly than in the beholding of any other object in living nature. For you see no one point precisely, not one distinct feature is revealed, no nose, eyes, ears, or mouth, no face. He has none proper. Nothing but that one broad firmament of a forehead, pleated with riddles, dumbly lowering with the doom of the boats and ships of men. Nor in profiles does the wondrous brow diminish, though that way viewed its grandeur does not domineer upon you so. In profile you plainly perceive the horizontal semi-crescent depression in the forehead's middle, which in man is Levator's mark of genius. But how? Genius in the sperm whale? Has the sperm whale ever written a book, spoken a speech? No. His great genius is declared in his doing nothing particular to prove it. It is, moreover, declared by the pyramidical silence. And this reminds me that had the sperm whale have been known to the young Orient world, he would have been deified by their child Magian thoughts. They deified the crocodile of the Nile, because the crocodile is tongueless, and the sperm whale has no tongue, or at least it is so exceedingly small as to be incapable of protrusion. if thereby any highly cultured, poetical nation shall lure back their birthright, the merry Mayday gods of old, and livingly enthrone them again in the now egotistical sky, in the now unhaunted hill, then be sure, exalted to Jove's high seat, the great sperm whale shall lord it. Champollion deciphered the wrinkled granite hieroglyphics, but there is no Champollion to decipher the Egypt of every man's and every being's face. Physiognomy, like every other human science, is but a passing fable. If, then, Sir William Jones, who read in 30 languages, could not read the simplest peasant's face in its profounder and more subtle meanings, how may unlettered Ishmael hope to read the awful Chaldee of the sperm whale's brow? I but put that brow before you. Read it, if you can. Thanks for listening to Moby Dick Pod. If you've liked what you've heard so far, consider subscribing or leaving us a rating on Apple Podcast. And as always, thanks for listening.